Welcome to Off the Menu with Dara Moskowitz-Grumdahl, the Twin Cities' leading food critic and senior editor of Minneapolis St. Paul magazine. Off the Menu is all about food in the restaurant, at the market, and on your table. Now, here's Dara on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Mushrooms. Who is in the mood for lots and lots of mushrooms? I hope it's you, because I got a whole show talking about mushrooms. I have Peter McCoy from Radical Mycology. He's been going all around the country talking to people about growing mushrooms, raising mushrooms, how we can kind of do more with mushrooms. And I also have Alan Burgo in the second half of the show from the upcoming St. Paul restaurant Salt Cellar. That is going to be a great place. Alan Burgo used to work at Heartland for many years. That's kind of our hotbed of foraged mushrooms and stuff like this. Now he's going out on his own. We're going to talk to him about how to cook them, what's the difference between cooking the wild foraged and the cultivated, all kinds of things. Get the scoop on what's going to be one of probably the biggest restaurant, new restaurant in St. Paul this year. That Salt Cellar. I'm also going to do a top five of cooking with beer, because I have been maybe drinking too much, and I've got a lot of growler kind of ends, and I want to use them in useful and important ways. So I got a top five of that. So it's going to be all kinds of good stuff. And first off, we're going to welcome Peter McCoy. Peter McCoy is a mushroom cultivation instructor and co-founder of a group called Radical Mycology, which focuses on making mycology, that is the science of fungi, available to everybody. So he's on a three-month tour of North America, evangelizing, teaching us all about the magic of fungi. He's teaching a workshop in like an hour in South Minneapolis. So what's so magic about fungi? I want to find out right now. Peter McCoy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dara, for having me. Excited to be here.
I am so happy you're here. Okay, so tell me, Radical Mycology, what is it that you're trying to let people know about mushrooms?
Yeah, well, Radical Mycology is a volunteer-run organization. We're very open source about our approach to mycology, and I think that's one of the things that we try to distinguish ourselves from sort of traditional mycology, where traditionally mycology has been largely in the realm of academia, and the literature that was available to most people, at least as far as cultivation went, was usually a bit more technical and seemingly kind of difficult and expensive for the sort of home small-scale cultivator. So a big part of our work is trying to make mycology much more accessible, and also put it into kind of a modern context where working with fungi, we can grow them for food, for medicine, for helping out landscapes, helping out plants and animals and insects and everything, because they naturally play a really integral role to the ecosystem. And so we try to really focus on that aspect of working with fungi, how they can actually play into many different living systems and sort of sustainable living styles, whereas historically they've been more relegated to just kind of a farm scale and sort of a detached approach.
So are people putting them in their gardens? Can you put...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's many fungi that companion with plants and actually help plants grow bigger and better and have a better yield and actually protect...
Give me an example.
Well, there's quite a few. There's soil-dwelling fungi called arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi that farmers and gardeners can cultivate that attach to the roots of plants and actually draw in minerals and protect the plant from disease and overall help its growth and produce healthy soil in the process.
So if I'm like crazy about roses, I could add a special mushroom to the soil and that'll help the roses?
Yeah, it's a certain type of soil-dwelling fungus. And then there are mushrooms that we can actually fruit and get food out of and things like that that have been shown to companion with plants and make them grow bigger. So a really common example is one called the elm oyster. And it helps all your brassica plants grow bigger, like broccoli and Brussels sprouts. It'll help the root ball grow bigger, the stalk grow taller, and the overall yield be more substantial just in companionship and proximity to this edible mushroom.
Oh, so if I have a big, you know, patch of broccoli and kale and Brussels sprouts, I'll put mushrooms in there and I'll get mushrooms to eat too?
Yeah, and it'll basically serve as a living mulch, so it keeps your weeds down. You don't have to water as much. And it's also pumping out CO2 as it's breaking down the wood or whatever it's growing on. So it's feeding the plants the air they need to breathe. And at the same time, producing some chemicals that help stimulate the soil and help the plant grow better. So you get all these multiple outputs for this very simple input, and not using up any extra space in the garden. It goes right over your garden bed, and it helps in so many ways.
If you're just joining us, I've got Peter McCoy here from Radical Mycology. We're talking about, he's traveling around the country telling people about what's cool and good and how to do it, how to grow mushrooms. So we've been talking about ones you can add to your soil, but I mean, can, like, if I just for decorative purposes wanted a fairy ring in my backyard, could I do that?
Doing the fairy ring where the mushrooms pop up every year in a circle isn't quite as easy to establish that, but you can sort of mimic it and try to reproduce it. Doing an actual real one is usually established over many years or decades. But we can make a mushroom bed in a circle. A big thing that I like to do is sort of a creative aspect to mushroom gardening is actually designing our beds in all kinds of artistic designs, creative designs. In most books, you just see them laid out in a square or rectangle, but we can do them in any shape.
So you have mushroom beds? Like, I can just go in my backyard and make a special place to grow mushrooms?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've done whole mushroom gardens where it's just mushroom wood chip beds in the ground, and then also inoculate wooden logs and kind of stand them up as decorative, like, poles. All kinds of creative ways. And you can even use the inoculated logs as the retaining walls for raised bed gardens. And so there's many ways to incorporate them into food gardens.
So I could have logs as the retaining wall and then inoculate those. And then I could have oyster mushrooms, something like that, growing out of just the – well, that would be cool.
Yeah.
So how are mushrooms doing in the world? I mean, wild mushrooms, are they thriving? Are they having troubles? What's the –
Well, that's a good question. It's actually an interesting topic right now because in the history of mycology and sort of foraging and just identifying mushrooms, it's always been a relatively small amount of scientists and just even amateurs contributing to our understanding of distribution and species populations. So there's actually a really big movement right now. A couple projects are popping up, one specifically called the North American Mycoflora Project, trying to encourage foragers and even mushroom mycological societies to document all the mushrooms they find and plot it into some collaborative Google Maps to actually get a better understanding of species distributions. Because there might actually be a number of species that are endangered or threatened, and we just don't know at this point. But by and large, I mean, depending on your location, I know the Midwest is a big mushroom hunting, has a big mushroom hunting culture. Same with the Northwest where I'm from. They seem to be doing pretty good. This last year was actually quite a bumper crop because the year prior had been a little bit dry and less of a yielding year. So sometimes it'll fluctuate, but by and large, they seem to be doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking to people around the country. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Peter McCoy from Radical Mycology. I'm talking about mushrooms, what's cool about them. So you can eat them, obviously. And then what else is it? So you're going around telling people, I mean, I know you grow them in houses. Like, are people growing them indoors? Is this a big thing that's going on?
Yeah, and that's one of the really exciting things about mycology, in my opinion. In just really the last decade, home cultivation, small-scale kind of personal growth, growing mushrooms has really expanded from what it used to be. Historically, in just prior to the last decade, most home cultivators were growing illegal mushrooms, you know, which is unfortunate. But if anything, maybe some oyster mushrooms, which are pretty easy to grow.
I see those kits sometimes.
Yeah, but now it's really exploded with the wealth of information on the internet now available and sort of the way that information is being interpreted and the concepts and principles of cultivation are being better and better refined, that many people around the world are experimenting and doing all types of creative cultivation projects in the home, in the garden, in all kinds of environments, all kinds of climates, finding new ways to cultivate different mushrooms for food, for medicine, and for helping restore habitats.
And who is coming to your Radical Mycology events? Is it people that want to grow little mushrooms in the, you know, oyster mushrooms in the backyard? Or is it people are trying to start businesses?
I mean, it's everything and all that and more. People from all demographics I've witnessed coming to our events, all ages, all backgrounds, for any number of reasons. Some people that are gardeners and want to support their plants. Some people that are just interested in mushrooms for any number of reasons. But a lot of people are getting interested in this aspect of home cultivation. How can we do it easily, simply, cheaply, with a minimal of investment of energy and time? And the fact is that the ability to do all that, to grow mushrooms easily and cheaply, has become much more available and accessible again in the last decade. Historically, you know, the books and sort of the approach and understanding of mycology and cultivation was relatively limited, or at least very much focused on sterile, very clean, expensive laboratory type settings. And now cultivators are mimicking how the fungi actually grow in nature and working with them in a bit more, if you will, dirty way or more naturalistic way to cultivate them, again, with lower inputs, less fossil fuels, but getting still a great return in the process. And so that's what we advocate. A big part of Radical Mycology is how do we grow mushrooms in any situation with minimal investment to make this tangible, make this realistic for people and not something that's sort of impossible or unapproachable.
That's very cool. Well, if you're listening and you want to find out more about Radical Mycology, they have a Facebook page. You can just, you know, kind of look for Radical Mycology. I'll tweet a link out to it later. On Twitter, I am at Dear Dara. And you have a workshop, like, and you have to rush out of here to get to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be in the Phillips neighborhood at 2323 11th Avenue. And it's going to be an introduction to mushroom cultivation and reaching into what's called permaculture, more sustainable living systems, and how fungi play into that or can play into it. Often the mycology fungi are missing from a lot of sustainable living systems just because most people don't know much about them. So this workshop will be 4 hours focusing on many ways to cultivate fungi again easily and simply with a good return. And then also at the end of it, we'll do a hands-on component where people actually cultivate some fungi and take it home.
Oh, that is so awesome. I love that. I talked to a guy once, Jeremy McAdams from Cherry Tree House, and he just started buying logs off Craigslist and drilling holes in them and inoculating them. And he had just oyster mushrooms growing all over his South Minneapolis backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was so – I think it's just very cool. Well, thank you. Thank you for spreading the word about mushrooms. When we come back on Off the Menu, I'm going to have some great beer recipes, and then we're going to have Alan Burgo from Salt Cellar.
You're listening to News Radio 830.
Broadcasting from the Land O'Lakes studio.
WCCO.
I just love that idea. I love that idea of having the logs that are kind of part of your, structurally part of your garden, actually produce oyster mushrooms. I just feel like that's the coolest thing I've heard in ages. If you think it's cool too, I don't know, let me know. I just tweeted out a link to all of that. I'm enthusiastic about growing mushrooms that are invisible to help your broccoli. That's just cool. It's all cool. What is also cool is all of the microbreweries that we have in the Twin Cities now. I love them. Everybody loves them. They open every week. There's practically a riot at the new Lynn Lake Brewery opening. There were so many people lined up to get in the minute the Lynn Lake Brewery opened. What do we do with all our microbreweries? Well, among other things, we buy growlers, which is a good thing to do. But do you ever kind of end up at the end of the day with like just a little bit of flat beer just sitting in your growler? What are you going to do with that? Here's what you're going to do with that. I've got a top five cooking with beer ideas. I thought we should round up some of these things so we can all use up our extra little flat beer at the end of our growlers. So here's what I'm thinking. Number five, beer cheese soup. Of course, in Minnesota, standard bearer is the beer cheese soup from Muffaletta. They guard that recipe, though, the way Coca-Cola does guard their own recipe. I put a link up on our WCCO.com Facebook or website, WCCO.com, the Off the Menu page. If you want to see a video and try to get some clues, I got some clues out of that video myself. They use Summit EPA in that Muffaletta beer cheese soup, a little nutmeg and cayenne pepper, and that's all I know. But I put up a link to a friend of the show, Amy Thielen, from that TV show Heartland Kitchen. She has a beautiful recipe, and I have a link to that up on Off the Menu page. So that's my number five, is beer cheese soup. My number four, beer bread. Okay, I love sourdough bread. I am not currently keeping a sourdough starter. That may happen to me one day. I'm not doing it now. So my workaround to get that kind of sourdough taste without keeping a starter going, I use beer in place of the water and some no-knead dough. That's the no-knead dough. That's the kind of stuff that ripped through the country in a great no-knead sensation a couple of years ago. I've got the Sullivan Street Bakery recipe. All I do, I just put some beer in place of the water. Easy peasy. You make that really loose dough and then you cook it up in a Dutch oven. Really easy to do. It makes the house smell fantastic. So that's my number four, is the beer bread. My number three thing to do with your leftover beer and things like that that you get from your growlers, that would be, I'm going with my French accent here and I got a stuffed nose, so it's going to be, we're going to go into dangerous territory, but it's coq à la bière. All right, so you've heard of coq au vin, right? That's the French one-pot dish of chicken cooked in wine. Even better, for my money, is coq à la bière. That's chicken and beer. So you do it in the crock pot or Dutch oven. Really easy. Put a link up to the Savour recipe. Good stuff. Good way to use up things. Number two, well, I had to put this up. Of course, beer can chicken. That's a great thing to do. You put the chicken on top of the beer, throw it on the grill. You open the beer, of course. You drink part of it. And the steamy steam that comes out from inside the beer can keeps the chicken moist and the skin crisps up outside. Sometimes I actually shove some rosemary from the garden into that beer can, too. You better use it before it freezes. I'm on a mission to use up everything in the garden before the freeze comes. But what's my number one favorite thing to do with all the little growler ends from our microbreweries? Number one, gotta be beef carbonade, also known as pot roast with beer. Yeah, I've been making pot roast all my life. I am a card-carrying wine critic, and I think I've decided I really do like the Belgian version better, where you throw some beer into the pot to replace the cooking liquid instead of wine. Putting up a link to a full-fledged recipe. I gotta say, I never put in beef stock. I've seen so many carbonade recipes where they're like, buy some beef stock. Why? I think that's just a waste of time and a waste of money. So I just use a chuck arm roast. That's my favorite. Throw it in the pot with some beer. I'm lazy, but I get good results. And I'm putting a link up there on wcco.com/off-the-menu. And we come back, going to keep up our mushroom conversation with Alan Burgo from the upcoming St. Paul restaurant Salt Cellar.
You're listening to Off the Menu on News Radio 830 WCCO.
We are continuing mushroom festivities today. So Alan Burgo is here in the studio with me. He is a St. Paul chef. He'll be opening Salt Cellar, which is a very hotly anticipated Crocus Hill new kind of supper club with a lot of classical French elements. It's going in kind of kitty corner from W.A. Frost, if you know where that is. But he is also known as a local mushroom guru, foraging, cooking, blogging, which he does at foragerchef.com. He learned about foraging, I think, starting off at that locavore Temple Heartland in St. Paul, where he was a sous chef for Lenny Russo for many years. But I got to tell you, even now, Lenny Russo admits that with all of Alan Burgo's tramping in the woods, he is our local mushroom king. So if you got a question about cooking with mushrooms, tweet them to me. I am at Dear Dara. And I think Alan Burgo would have the answer because he's here. All right, Alan Burgo, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am delighted. So I got to ask you, so is Salt Cellar still on track for November open?
Yes, we're looking at around the third week, around the 20th.
Oh, okay. You're even putting a number on it. You think you're pretty confident. Well, so people probably want to know, what is this restaurant, that Salt Cellar, that's coming to Crocus Hill in St. Paul?
What is it? Well, it's going to be a steakhouse, but it'll be different from a lot of the steakhouses that I see around here in that the ingredients will be seasonal. And, I mean, you won't see asparagus on the menu unless it's spring. There will be some of the sensibilities that I learned from Heartland there.
All right. So then, of course, some of those sensibilities will be mushrooms. Of course, everyone's used to mushroom paired with steak, but I kind of sense you're going to do more than that.
Well, a lot of people, I get a lot of questions like, are there going to be mushrooms on everything? When people hear about my website or see some of the work that I've done, and the mushrooms will be there, but they're not going to be on everything because that's not exactly the concept. I don't have an army of people
sure,
to go
out. Sure, not a mushroom restaurant.
Yeah,
but
and it's still kind of illegal for me to even bring in all of my toys until the state of Minnesota gets all its stuff figured out.
Oh, I don't even know about this. Is that something that's going on right now?
Yeah, you have to be certified to sell wild mushrooms, but there's no way to be certified.
That sounds complicated.
Yep, that's essentially right. What's going on.
All right, if there's any enterprising legislators out there who want to fix something that needs fixing, there you know, there's a way to do it. We get some more mushrooms in around things. So speaking of mushrooms, because that's what we are doing, I wanted to ask you, you know, I'm sort of a newbie cooking with all the different mushrooms, and I want to talk about sort of where to start and how to cook with them, because you get such great flavors out of them, but maybe not with button mushrooms. So where would you start if you want to get out of the button mushroom section of the store?
Well,
is it shiitakes? Do you start with oyster
mushrooms?
I think
shiitakes are probably the best cultivated mushroom. The first thing that you need to understand is that when you're cooking a mushroom, there's a lot of water in them, so you want to cook them on high heat. If you crowd the pan and just kind of stuff them all in there, they're going to do something called poêlée, which kind of means to stew in their own juice. You want to cook them on high heat and caramelize them. And that's probably the first place to start. As far as like different species, cultivated ones, shiitakes are probably my favorite cultivated mushroom.
So what is the difference between the cultivated and the wild? There aren't that many that you find around that, you know, you can kind of compare and contrast. But oyster mushrooms, I've definitely seen.
There's a really good example. That's a great question. The best example that I've found is the hen of the woods. So the hen of the woods can be grown on an artificial substrate, or it can be found in the wild. So I've done a lot of tests comparing the two here and there, and it's a world of difference.
So hen of the woods, for people that don't know, that's like a kind of like a, it looks like a little shelf. It kind of ruffles out. It's bright orange.
That's a chicken of the woods.
Oh, that's a chicken of the woods.
Latiporus sulfurius or Latiporus cincinnatus. We have two versions here. The cincinnatus is my favorite. It actually has white pores instead of yellow on the underside. The hen of the woods is brown. It's kind of a sexy cousin of the chicken of the woods, and it only grows on the ground, where the chicken of the woods could grow on the ground from the roots or directly from the tree. The hen of the woods will only grow on the ground,
brown. So the hen of the woods is more boring looking. It's got a brown color.
It's not exactly boring looking. It's much more difficult, I would say, to find than a chicken of the woods, because the chicken of the woods is orange.
All right, so that's why I think that everything is a chicken of the woods, because I've only seen the orange ones. But the brown hens of the woods, they are blending in. But anyway, so you're getting – I didn't even know that they were being cultivated. I'm learning a lot. So people are growing them inside – barns or something.
Yep. And the important thing to know is, just like seasonal vegetables or animals that eat a diet that's not corn-based, mushrooms that are grown on an artificial substrate are not going to taste anywhere near a wild mushroom. A cultivated hen of the woods.
So what is it? Like, they're not as intense?
Yeah. And basically, the way I describe it is that a cultivated hen of the woods is going to taste like a button mushroom in a different shape.
Oh, no, I don't want that.
And it's exactly what they taste like. And it just kind of goes to show what they grow on and what feeds them is really important flavor-wise.
Now, I've talked to other chefs who don't like the wild ones because they're like, oh, they might have like crispy parts that have got to get cut out, or there might be bugs, or there might be, you know. Like,
yeah, well, it's a natural
non-standard
thing. It's going to have bugs. There could be larvae, just like an apple could have a worm in it. It's a natural thing. And when I see stuff like that, it reassures me, you know, I know that there's no chemicals in my food. It's a natural part of life. And if they're scared of that, then keep on cooking those button mushrooms.
Okay, so there's a we have done nothing but radical mushroom lovers today on the show. I like it. So if I've got some, I'm very confident mushroom gatherer, and I've got some hen of the woods, what are some good ways to, what do you do with them?
Well, first, it depends on the age of the mushroom. A lot of people think just because they find it, oh, this is going to be a great eater. The age is very important. Just like a bulb of fennel grows, or a bulb of cauliflower, when it goes to flower, the texture and the flavor could get more bitter, or it could change. The texture of a mushroom depends on the age. The hen of the woods that are my favorite are when they're very, very young. When you cook the super young ones before they've released their spores, and when they're really still young and tight, they almost have a texture of like a soft oyster. And as they grow, they get more fibrous and they get more chewy. And a lot of people will say, hey, I found this hen of the woods. I'm going to let it grow until it gets huge. It's not going to taste as good.
Oh,
in my opinion.
These may be like the pears that I have on my counter where they're like too hard. You get about 15 minutes where they're perfect, and then they just all go.
Yeah, the age is very important with chanterelles too, with all of them.
Do you find that a lot of people are eating mushrooms that are elderly and not good anymore, too hard and too...
The scariest thing I probably see is morels in the spring, because that's one that in the Midwest, if you say wild mushroom, people just think morels. And I have seen people take pictures of things they're going to eat that are way past their prime. Just because you found it doesn't mean that you should eat it.
I think you could write some good bumper stickers. So what about the dried mushrooms? I always see little bags of dried mushrooms in the grocery store. What are the best things to do with those?
And that is a great question, too. It depends on the species. There are some species sold in stores that they should not sell.
Really?
Chanterelles. And their cousins, the hedgehog mushrooms, they should not be dried. It The flavor is not as good. I've tried it. I've tried it again. I've tried rehydrating them. It changes it. It makes it – it's not the same. Something that's very soft and porous, a bolete. Bolete's dry like a dream, and they are my favorite to dry.
What are the common – what would I know as a bolete?
A porcini is a bolete.
Oh, the porcinis. I've done that for Thanksgiving one year. I took some porcini powder and I added it to butter and put it under the skin of the turkey. That was a good thing to do. That was tasty.
Yep.
So porcinis, they're good dried.
They're good dried.
When I go to Asian markets, I see those little – but they're not shiitake, but they're something else. They call them black mushrooms, or they call them...
They could be woodier.
Oh, yeah.
Those are okay to dry. You can also change them into powder and put them in a coffee grinder. That's a way that you can get around some of them that may have a texture that's really chewy when you rehydrate them. But the one that I kind of laugh when I see at the store is dried chanterelles. So I would stay away from those. And another thing that's really important to know about dried mushrooms is that the flavor is really, really concentrated. You know, you've taken this thing and you've sucked out all the water and you've concentrated the flavor and it kind of transforms. And there's a caveat to cooking with them in that if you just put it into a pot of stock and reheat it and you put a whole bunch in there, you can actually ruin a dish by adding too many wild mushrooms because it can make things bitter. And the different species will also affect that. A way that you can get around that is kind of by treating the dried mushrooms like spices. If you toast them a little bit, that bitterness will leave, and it's really going to transform the dish and improve the flavor.
Oh, that's a hot tip. So if I'm going to add dry mushroom powder to a soup, toast it in a skillet first.
Cook it in a little bit of butter.
Oh.
Just melt a little bit of butter in a cast iron skillet or wherever you got, and just put a little bit of color on it. You don't want to toast it because it's going to burn really easy. But if you just expose it to some heat and a little bit of fat, it's really going to transform things for you.
I think I want you to be standing by that aisle of the grocery store so I can ask you questions at the time. Another thing, if you're just joining us, I have Alan Burgo here from Upcoming Salt Cellar, kind of a mushroom guru in town. He also runs the website foragerchef.com. So I would need to ask you about this new generation of cultivated mushrooms that I'm seeing, places like forest mushrooms and Mississippi mushrooms. What do you think about these new, interesting, cultivated species?
Well, I mean, first off, they're cultivated mushrooms, so they're grown on an artificial substrate. They're not going to taste as good as wild. To me, they're kind of a novelty. I've seen the pink oyster mushrooms and things like that. They're okay. Like I said, my favorite cultivated variety is still probably shiitake, and I don't know, they're okay.
Oh, they've got a poker face here. I think I know that you're not saying that they're okay. Well, I'm excited to try some of them. I've seen some of the fancy ones like the lion's head mane. I've never tasted one, but they're beautiful. They're very fuzzy and they look like sea anemones or something.
Yeah, the biggest thing is just make sure to put some color on them. Don't just put them in a pan and cook them with some wine or something. You want to cook them, get them golden brown on the outside. That's when the cultivated mushrooms are going to have the best flavor.
Oh, really? So a little fat, some olive oil or butter. Do you have any feelings about which is the best?
I would start off with a high smoke point oil. Cook them on high heat for a little bit.
It's like peanut oil, something like that?
It depends on what you're going for.
I'm just totally just making stuff up. What are
I
we
like?
What
I like lard. I like grapeseed oil.
Oh, lard.
Oil.
Okay.
Yeah.
Duck
fat and chanterelles would be real traditional. You want to add salt. I like to add it about halfway through because if you add it right away, especially if you've washed them with these wild varieties, need to be washed. Some people say you can just brush them, but if it's been raining or if it was in a sandy area, I need to wash them. And then I'll let them dry on towels for an hour or two. But if you add salt right away, it's going to draw water, and then they're going to steam instead of caramelize. So that's important too, is when the water comes out of the mushrooms. So I cook them on high heat and some oil. Then I like to finish the pan with a little bit of butter because that milk fat will kind of insulate them and help them not burn and just kind of be nice and gentle and help them get nice and golden brown.
All right. These are good tips. So I wanted to ask you, too, about those grow-your-own mushroom kits. I see them in the stores. Do you think those are a good thing to do, or are they just like a silly little, you know?
It's kind of like a fun little science project.
So you get the kit, you put some water and some sawdust, and then you get oyster mushrooms out of it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they're kind of going to taste like sawdust. But they're a fun little science project, and there's nothing wrong with it.
So I did not expect that you were going to have such a strong feeling of positive for the wild mushrooms and against the cultivated. I'm glad that we had this talk. I feel like I'm learning a lot. But what are we supposed to do then if we're not – I don't know enough about mushrooms. I mean, should people start learning about mushrooms and getting into the woods and doing all that?
Well, I mean, to me, it was just something I was interested in, and I started discovering – the real depth of flavor when I started playing with the wild ones.
How did you first start going on mushroom hunts? That seems daunting.
I was playing frisbee golf.
You're playing frisbee golf.
Yep. But the first time I got exposed to them, I was working with Andy Lilcha back at Il Vescovino, and he would bring in all kinds of wild mushrooms. And it just kind of primed me for seeing the stuff on my own. Once I saw in the restaurants and I knew what was good to eat, then I started buying field guides and I started teaching myself. But I really got spoon-fed through the restaurant industry. And that's what primed me and kind of stirred my interest in it.
Well, that's one of the reasons that people like restaurants is you could go and you can try new flavors and things you never got to have before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I've always been excited at Heartland, you know, to see interesting mushrooms and odd. Could I also trust that there's a chain of command there where somebody is foraging them and then somebody is buying them and it feels very safe? Because
mm-hmm.
I'm a city kid. I didn't grow up looking for mushrooms in the woods. Do people come to you and with stuff they just grabbed out of the woods and they want to know what
absolutely.
It is?
Oh, absolutely. I get emails from people from Greece to Australia about, can I eat this?
Oh, really? People are just taking pictures with their smartphones and...
Oh, yeah. Mostly through Facebook.
So what happens typically? Can they eat them or you
this
don't
is
get
a really,
into it?
This is kind of a hairy thing because people just expect they can take a picture of something standing over it, and there's a lot more to it. I need to be able to see the stem. You need to be able to see the gills. Are there gills? Are there pores? What's it growing on? What's the kind of tree that it's growing on? What's the season? What's growing in the area? All that stuff is really important. What's the spore color is huge. Mushrooms have a spore print where you can put them on a piece of white and then a piece of black paper, and it's going to give you different colors. And then you match that color up and kind of cross-reference things. And that is one way that helps you identify stuff. And people, they don't know. So they expect they can just take a picture and shoot it off to me. I'm not going to be able to tell you with certainty that you can eat that.
Yeah, that sounds like murky territory to get into in any event. But I got a whole mushroom reference guide, and I was astonished. I don't, like I said, I'm a city kid. I don't know that much about them. But the different forms of them, like a baby mushroom and a midpoint mushroom and a spore, like they can look totally different and be one species.
Yep. Just like vegetables change as they grow, I mean, mushrooms are the same way.
I guess that's true. A pea sprout looks very different than a whole full-blown pea plant. Well, interesting stuff. And so people want to know what's going to be on the menu at Salt Cellar. Give me at least one mushroom thing that'll be on your menu.
Well, the beef tartare has a little bit of those dried porcini we were talking about where I cook them and toast them in a little bit of butter, and then I chop them fine, and we put that right on top of the tartare. And that is... that's probably one of my favorite ways that we're going to use them.
All right. Well, Alan Burgo from the upcoming Salt Cellar, thanks for coming in and talking about mushrooms. If you want to see Alan Burgo's exciting work with all these different mushrooms, you can check it out online at foragerchef.com. When we come back to Off the Menu, I am going to be answering your questions. So send them on in. I am on Twitter at Dear Dara. And Alan Burgo, thank you so much for coming in today. All right. See you in a minute on Off the Menu.
Listen to WCCO on FM at 1029 KMNB HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and on your smartphone by downloading the radio.com app.
This is the part of the show where I answer your questions. It's our weekly Ask Me Anything. I got a question about the best grilled cheese in the Twin Cities. It has definitely taken a turn to grilled cheese weather. I gotta say, my favorite has to be the grilled cheese at Manny's, especially if you get them to add in a bunch of bacon. That is a good thing. It's hard to eat that next to a steak, though, so you maybe just go and just get a side dish. No one can do that, but Manny's is my absolute favorite local grilled cheese. Another question I've got about favorite hot dogs. Somebody's getting an end-of-the-season weenie roast from a local butcher. You know who makes really good ones is Inga Bretzen's on Lake Street, the old Swedish and Norwegian Butcher Shop on Lake Street. They do just some of the snappiest, great flavor. I love the hot dogs from Ingebretsen's. I've got another question, and people are wondering about why I'm so crazy about mushrooms. Well, I just think it is, I just love that there's so much to learn about the world and so much to explore, discover, eat, all that good stuff. I hope you have the best week of tasty eating and discovery yourselves.